Hi, good afternoon. This week we prepare for Parshas Vaera as the Makos are beginning against the Egyptian people. So the fascinating comment in the Medrash. The Medrash comments when Moshe Rabbeinu takes his staff, and he brings it to in front of Paro. So he has a staff in his hand, he throws the staff down, and the staff turns into some sort of snake, some sort of serpent. And then when he picks it back up, it returns to being a snake again. And the Medrash comments that that there is some sort of symbolism in here, in the fact that there is this snake which is crooked, that the snake is slithering. So you have a staff which is straight. It's thrown down to the ground and it's slithering around like a crooked stick. And then you pick it back up and it's become straight again. And says the Medrash, the same thing is the message there. The same thing is true in Paro. Paro, you're supposed to be straight and you've become crooked. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the purpose of the Makos is that the Makos will straighten out the crooked snake. So the Ksav Sofer writes that what's the significance of the Medrash's comparison of Paro to a serpent and a staff? What's the, of all things, you could have had something else that's straight and becomes crooked. Well, what exactly, why is it specifically the snake and the serpent? And he has a beautiful idea. And he suggests that both the snake and the staff have the capacity to injure somebody else, to strike a blow against another person. But there's a big difference between them, because the snake acts on its own. The matah, in order to strike a blow, is the instrument in the hands of somebody else. It's used by somebody else in order to inflict the blow. But it's really in the power of whoever is wielding it. Paro viewed himself as a nachash, as a serpent. He believed that he was the one who was in control. He was the one who could do what he wanted to the Jewish people. They were his avadim, and they were completely subservient to him. And if he wanted to enslave them, if he wanted to force them to work, so be it. That's what he can do. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nobody else, there's no force, there's nobody out there that can stop Paro from doing what he wanted to do. So Paro viewed himself as the one who could inflict the blow and could subjugate and can harm at will. And this was the attitude that he reflected when he would repeat and when he would threaten Moshe, called Moshe ben Amram, don't come back in front of me. And Moshe would return to Paro and would find that and try to show Paro that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to, you're powerless. There's nothing that you can do. And it was this lack of independent power that forced Paro in the end to realize that he wasn't a snake. In the end, all he was an instrument in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that the Jewish people should be enslaved, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that the Jewish people needed to be fixed, then Paro was able to be that matel, was able to be instrument through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu would punish and enslave the Jewish people. But Paro got it all wrong. And that was the specific symbolism of having both the matem and the nachash, both with the ability to injure, as Ksasover so beautifully says, but in very different ways. And Paro got it wrong. He thought when he was inflicting the injury on Klal Yisrael, he was doing it because he was the nachash, because he wanted to do it. And little did he realize, and that's what the purpose of the Makos was to teach Paro that, no, you're not in control. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who controls, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who controls the world, and ultimately make sure that whatever is supposed to happen is going to happen. It's fascinating that if you look at the Makos, there are so many lessons on a deeper level in terms of midos, in terms of how we are supposed to act, that emerge from the minor details of the Makos. I wanted to share two of them with you, two very, very interesting ones, but two very fundamental ones. Right at the very beginning, the Torah tells us, Vayomer Hashem, El Moshe, and more El Aharon. That Hashem tells Moshe to say to Aharon to go and to bring the plague against the water and that the water should turn into blood. And all of the water, and it will turn into blood. And the Medrash comments, Amar Rabbi Tamchum, Lama lo loku hamayim aydei Moshe. Very famous comment the Medrash has. Why were the waters not struck by Moshe? Amar lo kadosh baruch hamayim sheshmarucha kshishlach leyor enu din sheyilke al yotcha. It's inappropriate that the water that saved you, when back last week's parsha, when you were in that little teva, when you were in that little barely buoyant basket, and your life was at risk, and the water saved you, kept you afloat, that you should then hit the water. It's inappropriate. So this is often brought as a message of Hakaras HaTov. But if you think about it, then Moshe had a responsibility to show Hakaras HaTov. But what is that message of Hakaras HaTov? Now, Hakaras HaTov, we show somebody did something to you. You have an obligation. You're mischayiv to them. You have to show the person that you appreciate what was done for you by them or by him or her. But when it's a person, the person appreciates it. The person can understand it. But the mayim, the water, knows the difference. Whether Moshe Rabbeinu is hitting it, whether Aaron is hitting it, what difference does it make to the water? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz comments in his Sichos Musar that what you see from this is that the lesson of Hakaras HaTov reflects on the person who's showing the Hakaras HaTov, and for that alone is worthwhile. For Moshe Rabbeinu to show the appreciation makes Moshe a better person, even if Moshe is showing appreciation to an inanimate object. Even if the water can't understand why Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to hit it, what kind of Hakaras HaTov is it owed? It makes Moshe, if he's not the type of person that would feel that sensitivity, that would say, this water that saved me, I'm going to do something to harm it, to damage it, in such a way, that reflects poorly on Moshe Rabbeinu. The Mitnev Hakaras HaTov, sometimes we think, okay, does the other person really need it? Does the other person really care? You know, the person did something for me. So the answer may be, first of all, the person does care, and there is an appreciation which needs to be showed. But sometimes you have to do it for yourself, that you have to be the kind of person who appreciates the things that are done in life. And that's this concept of the fundamental nature of gratitude is that gratitude is something which is, some say gratitude is an attitude. It reflects one's outlook in general. And that perhaps is what Moshe Rabbeinu was being taught by HaKadosh Baruch Hu by not doing these makos and by treating even the inanimate objects with the proper respect and with the proper midah of Hakaras HaTov. The other lesson that you can see, again, amongst others, there are plenty more, if you spend the time to maybe think about it and look into the way the makos were done, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to reveal so much about the way he runs the world and the way the world should be run. His hashgacha and midos is tucked away in the makos that we sometimes just, take as stories. But one of those stories comes when it comes to the Tzvardayim. So, it's so hard to believe that, how foolish the Egyptians were. But the Pasuk says that when the Tzvardeya came up, it says that the Tzvardeya came up, and it says it in the singular. And then it says that it covered the whole land in frogs. How could it be that one frog cleared the entire land? So Rashi quotes the Midrash that one frog came up, and when the Mitzrayim tried to hit it, it multiplied, it turned into more frogs. And they pursued it, the additional frogs, and each time they hit one, it multiplied. And by hitting it and hitting it and hitting it, and each one multiplied, eventually, exponentially, it increased to the point where it covered the entire land of Mitzrayim. That's what the Pasuk says. And the question is just so obvious. How ridiculous were they? If you see that when you hit the frog, it turns into more frogs, so just stop hitting the frogs. They saw what happened. Just stop. Stifler explains that we see from this is the power of anger. When the frog has the chutzpah to increase when I hit it, Instead of dropping dead or hopping away like a frog is supposed to do, the anger burns stronger. And the reaction continues. A person who's angry acts instinctively, not rationally. And before they knew it, Mitzrayim is covered in frogs. Chazal tell us that anybody who's angry, kol mine gehenim shaltim bo, he's lost control. Why? It's not irrational. It becomes instinctive. And when you're acting with instinct, you're not acting with your mind, when you're not thinking, then you're going to be want to do, you're going to end up doing things that are irrational. The Chazal tell us, we're preparing for Shabbos. Erev Shabbos tends to be a time of extra stress. Chazal warned us, "La'olam al yatil adam ema yisera b'soch beis." A person must never, yes, be careful never to fill the house with a terror, with a fear. People should never think, "Oh, I can't, I have to be afraid of what's going to happen. My husband is going to be so angry. My wife is going to be furious. My kids should think my mother, my father is going to be so angry at me." If that becomes the lens through which people are looking at their loved ones and acting, then it's a dangerous one, and it's not a positive attitude. It's not a positive atmosphere. Yes, you should want to do things that will bring the other person happiness and won't bother the person. But if it's out of a sense of fear that I can't do this because the other person he's going to lose it, I can't have such a thing happen. We have a responsibility to recognize and to try to conquer the powerful midah. And the challenge with anger is, as we see with these tzvardeim, once you're in the rage, it's very hard to get out. And somehow we have to try and stop it. We have to try and make sure before it happens to figure out ways to avoid getting angry, to hold our bite our tongue, literally sometimes, but definitely figuratively, not to respond right away, not to respond to the email right away, not to respond to the text right away. When we feel that sense of anger inside of us, just try to let it go. Try to let it go. Think about it when you can think of Russia, because if you're acting out of instinct, then the danger is that you'll end up the same as the Mitzrayim. You'll end up in a situation in which the frogs are there. You're hitting the frog. You see the danger happening, and you still can't stop yourself. And that's scary. That's the kol mine gehenim shaltim bo. And that's a few of the lessons that can be learned from the Makos. The Makos are about building Klal Yisrael. And hopefully, just like they were built spiritually in those times, we can use these lessons, bring them to our Shabbos tables, bring them into our homes, and bring the positive energy of the Torah and the mitzvos and these midos tovos and beautify our Shabbos in this week and in weeks to come. Have a good Shabbos.